This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at the Zen Center of New York City. Shugan Roshi is the abbot of Zen Mountain Monastery and ZCNYC. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about the temple's retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org/ZCNYC. Thanks for listening.
This is from the Book of Serenity, Case 25. Yangguan's rhinoceros fan, the pointer. Oceans of lands without bound are not far apart from right here. The events of infinite eons past are all in the immediate present. Try to make them presented face to face, and they won't be able to bring it out in the wind. But tell me, where is the fault? The case. One day, Master Yangguan called to his attendant and saying, "Bring me the rhinoceros horn fan." The attendant said, "The fan is broken." Yangguan said, "If the fan is broken, then bring me the rhinoceros." The attendant had no reply. Master Zifu later drew a circle and wrote the word rhino inside of it. The verse. As the fan is broken, he seeks the rhino. The word in the circle has a reason. Who would have known the thousand-year light of the full moon would suddenly make a pervasive, luminous spot of autumn? Good morning. We are kind of like walking time and space machines. Oceans of land without bounds are not apart from right here. The events of infinite eons past are all in the immediate present. We carry all of that within us. Past, present, and future, things seen and unseen, people remembered and forgotten, like a drop of water that contains the rain and clouds and rivers and tears, sweat, back into the unknown past. Our senses are limited. They only extend a certain amount. And so the world in any moment seems to be just what we can see. But it's much closer than that. And there is no past we can return to. There's no future we can escape to. There is no apart from right here, no time other than the immediate present. And the nexus of all of that is you. The place where it all merges is you and every you that you see. Animate, inanimate. Indra's net is this image of how do we portray in our mind this web. So this vast web of interconnecting nodes in which each node reflects every other node, every other part of the web. And like a web, when you jiggle one corner of it, the whole web vibrates. It's difficult to have faith in that, or maybe it's we can have faith in it, but it's difficult to know it. We can know it to an extent with our mind, but we can know it more deeply with our mind. And so he says, how do you present it face to face? How do we meet it face to face? There are many reasons why meditation, Zazen, is so important, so essential to our path. In essence, it comes down to this, so that we can meet it. And in studying the Dharma, you know, we naturally want to be motivated. We want to be inspired. And a lot of that comes from feeling that what inspires us is what's relevant to us. what's speaking to us, what relates to our life, our times, our needs, our situations. And that's really important. And it is also in different ways and at different times limiting. Because those needs and desires are limited because what is relevant in our mind is by its very nature limiting. That changes. And it's also dependent upon our place, our perspective, our view, how small or large that is. But we do need that. That is part an important part of what inspires us. Advertisers know it. Politicians know it. Demagogues know it. Speak to that which is right on the surface, most accessible, easy to pull out, fears, angers, resentments, uncertainties. But the Buddha knew it too. And he spoke to those parts of ourselves that were both on the surface, life is dukkha, that everything we experience has within it the seeds of our dissatisfaction, disappointment. And he was simultaneously speaking at the deepest, to the deepest part. Helping us to recognize, yes, life is dukkha. There is satisfaction, but it's not ultimate. There is pleasure, but it's not permanent. We can't keep it. And it only goes so far. It only goes so deep. By its nature, that's its nature. And so he pointed to that dissatisfaction, that disappointment. And if the Dharma speaks to us, it's because on some level, there's an affinity with that. We resonate with it. That relates to our experience. And then he said, now come closer and look a little bit more deeply. Why? And so the teachings in that way have to simultaneously speak in such a way that we can relate to them, but also speak at a much deeper level. They have to invite us in the door, but also urge us to move close, further into the room. And so in that, we have to both be motivated by that sense of relevance and immediacy, but also be patient with that which does not immediately speak to us. And the koans are a good example of that, right? It's a lot of, I think the reason why a lot of people struggle with them is because they're framed in a different time and place and language. But their nature, I mean, that's their function. Their nature is to not make it not easy. I mean, their purpose is not to make it difficult, but their purpose is to not easily satisfy. And so with any teachings, koans and other Dharma teachings, we have to go back to them again and again. You know, we've all had experiences of that in just studying something difficult or new, challenging, where when we began studying, it was difficult. It was sometimes painful, uncomfortable. Because we don't understand it, and we have to stay with it, and stay with it, and stay with it, and come back to it, and then it begins to open up, and then it opens up to something different. And so here, this ordinary day, ordinary moment, Master Yongwan says, "Bring me that rhinoceros horn fan." A fan made from the horn of a rhinoceros. It's kind of interesting. You know, he doesn't really want the fan. He wants what the fan is going to make him feel. Oftentimes, the object of our attachment is not really what we want. We want what that object does to us. And that's how we can use things, people, situations, not so much for what they are, but for what we want them to give to us. That is why they are disappointing. The footnote to this line says, essentially, he can't be missing it. And the koan is pointing to the essential, right? We're not here because of interest of a fan. Essentially, he can't be missing it. Yangguan himself knows he's working on the behalf of liberation. For this attendant, for instance. And so when the attendant says, the fan is broken, Master, Yangguan realizes, oh. And so he says, well, then bring me the rhinoceros. And suddenly that simple moment becomes something more. When the attendant said, the fan is broken, the footnote says, before he brought it up, it was whole. It wasn't broken. The Faith Mind poem says, when love and hate are both absent, the way is clear and undisguised, complete, perfect. But if you make the smallest distinction, heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. If everything is whole, if everything is complete, if Buddha nature pervades the whole universe and exists here and now, if ultimately there is no distinction, no division, no barriers, then how can making the slightest distinction separate something that's whole? Where does that happen? So when we think about, reflect on our time, a time of great separations of heaven and earth, great separations of, on all kinds of levels, what are we actually seeing? Right? Samsara is a vivid display of mind, a dynamic sort of carnival, not always fun, by a long shot, of mind. And so within great divisions, we're seeing great divides in the mind. Boundaries, walls, that appear real, both in our minds, and so we make them real outside of ourselves. And appearing real, then we fortify them. We explain them. We measure them. We study them, but not to examine and realize their construction, but to further solidify them so often. But before we bring it up, it was whole. Actually, after bringing it up, it's whole. The mind is powerful enough to create this world that we live in, but not powerful enough to actually create real division. That only exists in the mind. And so he says, if the fan is broken, then bring me the rhinoceros. In the commentary, it says, this is Master Yangguan going into the weeds, into delusion, with his whole body into an intimate relationship with an adopted child, with a dear friend. The attendant had no reply. After all, they had just hit upon the true by way of the false. It's just that they themselves didn't know they already had it. And really, that just pretty much says it all. That's heaven and hell right there. After all, we have it. We just don't know it. And not knowing it becomes the basis for the whole story. Having faith in having it is the revolution underway. Yangquan isn't really concerned about the fan. He sure as hell isn't concerned about the rhino. Why doesn't he just say, bring me your true self then? Bring me your Buddha nature. Bring me your original face. How do we let go of what we cannot and are not in reality holding on to? At the very moment that our mind is so utterly convinced through our senses, our perceptions, that we are holding on to something that is real and solid and not me. When we speak of leaping free, what does that mean? How can we leap free from a place that we have never cannot abide in as a permanent, inherent person, place, thing? How do we free ourselves when we are not intrinsically bound? That's why practice is difficult. When we just talk about awareness or letting go or being the breath or seeing a koan or gaining insight, these are just words. The Buddha acknowledged, you know, people came to him and said, if the self is empty, if there is no self, then why do you keep referring to you and me, I? Why do you use these words? And the Buddha said, because they're conventions. We use them because they have a particular meaning and they refer to things and allows us to communicate. And he said, so use these conventions knowingly, that they don't refer to something that exists by itself, on its own, separate and distinct. And all of the words we use. So awareness itself is just a word. Letting go itself, that's just a phrase we use. It's a good phrase. Practice. What a great way of describing what we do. It's excellent, but it's still just a word. And then as soon as we begin actually practicing, we begin to realize that the words are just that. And we begin to discover what the word awareness, what the phrase letting go, what the practice being the breath is. Not what it means, but what it is. Their own lived experience. When you get to the point in your zazen where there is nothing in front of you, and yet there's a sense of something holding you back, but there's nothing there. How do you let go now? And so Yangquan is being skillful. If the fan is broken, bring me the rhinoceros. He's trying to do what needs to happen to us all the time. He's trying to take this attendant by surprise. Startle them into dissolution. Shock them out of their body of history, out of their knowledge, out of their experiences. And you can just imagine the attendant goes to the, you know, an image of a rhino. But there are no rhinos around here. Where will I get a rhino? What is he talking about? What is he asking me to do? And remember, this is not like a casual conversation. This is a formal request. He's not kidding. And so the attendant is not like, oh, you're just yanking my chain. You're just joking me. We should not presume he's taking it lightly. So what happens? The mind goes seeking, looking. For the rhino, that's not going to work. For some way out, for the right response. All the while, Yangguan is trying to bring him back. Bring him back. That we leap to the point where we stop leaping. We step forward to the point where we stop stepping forward. Oceans of lands without bound are not apart from right here ever. The events of infinite eons, the needs of the moment are always in the immediate present. It's hard to trust that with so much going on, with so much past, so much future in our mind. It's hard to trust that this moment is sufficient. It's hard to trust that this body and mind is sufficient. That's why the startling, the shocking, the you know, it may seem self-evident, but we really should take the Dharma seriously. You know, I was listening to a podcast recently, a philosopher who was talking about, from a point of view of secularism, of how not believing in God, one could have a perfectly valid and moral and meaningful life. And one of the ways he started the interview was by saying that most people who think they believe in God, who believe in God, don't really. So, of course, you want to keep listening, right? I wanted to keep listening. And so the interviewer says, what do you mean? And he said, if people really believed in God, would they live the way they're living? If we really understood Dharma, if we really understood karma, if we really understood the danger of attachments, how would we live? And so to take it seriously means not as a burden, but that we can do this. That when we experience a moment of irritation, of frustration, of anger, of sadness, of loneliness, of suffering, of dukkha, small or large, that's a moment to take the Dharma seriously. Because what the Dharma is saying is, yes, you are having that experience. There's a validity to that. But it is not necessary. It does not have to be so. It is so right now because of certain karmic actions and certain conditions which are absolutely necessary for it to be happening. And that is, in that moment, our bondage, and it's also our liberation. And so taking awakening seriously means in that moment, I see this moment of suffering. It might be very simple, very ordinary, very everyday. And if it is that, it means it's also probably pretty frequent. Or it may be something very, very significant, life-changing, life-shattering. That liberation is possible. Because that's going to change that moment. We're going to startle ourselves, shock ourselves into a different state of mind in that moment by taking it seriously. We're going to shift from thinking, why is this happening to me? To the question of, what is this? when the attendant said the fan is broken, or the attendant said had no reply, Yangguan says, if the fan is broken, then bring me back the rhinoceros. The attendant had no reply. Right? That's a moment we should all be able to identify with. That moment, too, that is not a failure. It's really important to appreciate that. That no reply moment, it too, is not apart from right here. It is in the immediate present. Quite likely, it's just the attendant doesn't yet know that. Thus, it's perceived as a failure. It's just not yet illuminated, which means it's not yet available for use. That moment has not yet been made relevant as emptiness coming forth into dynamic, vivid display of life. And all of these teachings are really trying to bring us to that moment and reach us in that moment and the moment that follows. Another master commenting, there are a whole series of comments on this koan, and that's always interesting when a dialogue like this is recorded and then you, in the records, you see lots of other teachers commenting on it, right? Like calls from the wing, right? Adding to the script. It means that it had a lot of interest, right? There were a lot of other teachers who were interested in this and wanted to put in their own two cents. And so an old master, Tutsi, said, if I bring out the horn, I fear that it will be imperfect. I fear the horn on the head will be imperfect. And another master said, I want an imperfect horn. That's the one I want. The great way is perfect like vast space with no excess and no lack. That too is very hard to have faith in, right? Seeing so much inequity, so much wrong in the world. What happens in the mind when something appears? Look at it from the point of view of the skandhas. The skandhas are basically describing you, the person. Form, sensation, conception, discrimination, awareness, the aggregates. Sort of the parts that make up what we call the person. And so first there has to be something, form, something that appears before you. And then there has to be contact with the eyes, with the ears, with the nose, with the skin, with the tongue, with your mind. And the moment there's contact, there's sensation. Right? That's what Buddhism means by feeling. Feeling is not emotion in Buddhism. When we use that word in Buddhism, Dharma, feeling means contact, sensation. Rough, smooth, hot, cold. So there's contact. And then conception is the perception is starting to come into our perception. We're starting to recognize it, understand it, understand what it is. Language appears, right? Frames it, labels it, knows it. And then mental formations, discrimination. I like this. I don't like this. This is good. This is bad. This is me. This is not me. And then consciousness, the whole catastrophe. What happens if it is just sensation? If when that object appears, there's just sensation, you don't get so involved. Right? The historic mind, the historic body does not get engaged, is not activated, is not reacted. It's just sensation. Because the moment with that, with perceptions and consciousness, that's the floodgate is opened, right? Of everything we know, everything in the past, everything we want. And that's, so delusion is not seeing things as they are. It's seeing things as we want them to be, as they should be, as they have been, as they could be. Before that, perfect like vast space. The fan never was lacking, never was missing. That's why it's sometimes analogy uses of a magician show. Then the magician is up there doing a show, and you're in the audience, and it's great, right? They're doing all these tricks. You can't figure out what's going on. Things are appearing and disappearing. It's magic. The magician knows. Right? They know what they're doing. They understand the trickery. Right? They see. They know what we're seeing, but they see what's really happening. The thing is, from the audience, it's a lot of fun. Magic show is a lot of fun. That's why there are magicians. Right? Do we want to know? We think if we know, that we're, it's not going to be so much fun. Or if we know, we won't be able to sit in the audience anymore and be entertained. Right? If we live a life of awareness and non-attachment, oh my God. That too is part of what we have to get over. You know, is understanding that this really is about happiness. It really is. The Buddha wanted liberation because he wanted to be happy. He wanted his students to free themselves. He wanted them to be happy. He taught the precepts because he wanted everybody to be happy. I'd bring the fan out, Tutsi said, but I'm afraid it would be imperfect. Another master said, I want an imperfect form. That's the one I want. Master Dogen said, the life of a Zen master is one continuous mistake. Imperfection is, you know, such a thing. Perfection is such a thing in our minds, in our culture. Right? With a sense of separateness, there will be insecurity. There will be doubt. There will be judgment. These things are just a matter of course that come naturally from the sense of a separate self. They're inevitable, pretty much. Because there's isolation, there's distance, there's estrangement, right? There's just this small little thing we call ourself, and then there's this vast world with so much going on, so much stuff. I was reading this article about why people who are super wealthy are not always that nice. So it started from a premise. And one of the things they talked about was how people who are super rich, or even just rich, like millionaires, let's say, usually hang out with other people who are rich, and usually also hang out with people who are richer than they are. And so that their wealth, relative to those around them, starts to seem not enough, isn't enough. And so that within that wealth, there's very little satisfaction, very little fulfillment, very little rest, very little enjoyment. The Buddha was on to that. And Dharma practice is to free us from this underlying sense of self so that we can free ourselves from this cycle, which will be unsuccessful. Is actively unsuccessful in fulfilling our deepest rightful longings. I want an imperfect horn. Can you trust that? He's not talking about a horn. And that doesn't mean don't care, doesn't matter, be sloppy. Obviously. It should be clear that that's not what that means. He's saying, I want this time, this place, this moment, this person, this situation, this mind. That's the one I want. That's the one that is not apart from right here. That's the one that is in the immediate present. That's the one that's true. That's the only reality in which there is practice and attainment. You know, when we, I mean, dukkha is hinging all of our bets on what's just coming around the corner. It's coming. I paid my dues. I have a bargain. I have a bargain with the universe. I have a bargain with the Dharma. I have a bargain with others, right? I've had lots of disappointments, but it's coming. I'm due. That fulfillment, being dependent upon, is our disappointment. Because even if it is fulfilled in a moment, in the next moment, it changes. And so what can we rely upon? Yangwan says, bring me that damn rhino. That's what you can rely on. What is it? Master Zifu drew a circle and wrote the character for rhino in it. And that means you have to put yourself inside that circle. Not as an idea, not as a symbol. Ancient, universal that it is. But when that circle is you, and you put rhino in the middle, now, where do you find yourself? An old master praised Zifu for drawing the circle and writing the word rhino inside of it. He said he praises Zifu for using it knowingly. Using it knowingly. Especially for boiling some tea for old Yangwan. Use it. It is to be used today. It is just this. It is this day, this person, this life, this relationship. That's what I mean when I say take the Dharma seriously in that moment, in this moment. It is using it, bringing it forth. Bringing what forth? Your fundamental nature. How do you do that? You get to the root. How do you do that? You settle your mind. The word in the circle has a reason, the poem says. The storm has always, 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 always been for you and for me. That's it. That's it. It's not that complicated. It's never been about anything else. I was just remembering years ago, some priests came from Soto school in Japan and were talking to Dada Roshi. This is many years ago, before he had any successors. And they have certain ways of measuring things. And one of the ways they measure things is by successors, right? And within that system, there's a different way of creating successors. And so they kept asking Dada Roshi, when are you going to have a successor? And Dada Roshi said, when they're ready. And they said, yes. When will that be? And he said, when they're ready. And they said, yes, of course. How long do you think? He was clear. It's about you. It's about me. It's not about the institution. As important as the future is, it's not about the future. That's an idea. If we take care of today, then we have a reasonable shot. A decent shot. Our best shot at taking care of tomorrow. If we don't take care of tomorrow, today, tomorrow's up for grabs. And this you that it's about is perfect like vast space. Bring me the rhino. If I bring it, it'll be imperfect. That's the one I want. But what is the nature of imperfection? Who decides? Right? I mean, think about these things that we can be so subject to. You know, social status, social class, high and low. How much do you make? How much are you worth? What kind of work do you do? What do you wear? What do you look like? How are you regarded? Who makes this shit up? Who votes on this? I don't remember the vote. I just remember worrying. I just remember being insecure, doubting, competing, winning, losing. This you that it's about is reclaiming. That's what it means to take the Dharma seriously. Get your mind back. Get your mind back from whoever would take ownership of it. From whoever would decide what is worthy and is unworthy. What is perfect and imperfect. When I talked in the morning about really trying to let go of all of the important things and certainly the unimportant things and clear space just now. And I know how hard it is to do that, particularly when you care about the important things. But it's so important to be able to do that. Because otherwise we never find out, we never see what else is there and what is the basis of all that is important. Otherwise it's just moving parts, it's just details, it's just tasks, it's just getting things done and opinions. If we don't get to that, make contact with that essential base, and when you do, then you know. You begin to know and have a sense of your own ground. And that's a whole different ballgame. That's why we call it mind training, training the mind, which is not mind indoctrination. It's not mind, you know, conditioning, it's really unconditioning. It's freeing. But it is training, which means what you do in Zazen is powerful. What we do when we're not practicing is also powerful. That's another form of mind training. But in Zazen, it's powerful, which means you want to be practicing well. So when you indulge judgment, self-criticism, a lot of the stuff that, you know, we get caught in, and we perpetuate that, we get stuck in that, we're training the mind to do that, continuing to train, and doing that within the context of the Buddha posture, right? That's an association you want to be shifting. Again, take the Dharma seriously. Even when you see, but that which I am criticizing should be criticized because it's imperfect. Okay, let's just say all of that's true. Screw it. For a moment. Drop it. That ground. Who would have known that the thousand-year light of the full moon would subtly make a pervasive, luminous spot of autumn? The full moon, extending 1,000 years, 1,000 billion miles in every direction, so luminous, so vast. Who would have thought that it would make a subtly pervasive, luminous spot of autumn? That's you. You know, this poetry, this language is beautiful. It's exquisite. And that's part of its purpose, right? Because we respond to that. We respond to beauty. Right? Otherwise, it would just be just, you know, industrial talk. Otherwise, when we serve food, we wouldn't spice it. We just serve just beans, rice. Doesn't matter how it tastes. It does matter how it tastes. We relate to that. It inspires us. It motivates us, right? It gives us spirit. And this language is intended to do that, right? Just like all of the arts. It lifts us, but not just for the sake of beauty or aesthetics or social commentary. But to bring us in, to inspire us to want to know, what is he saying? What is this rhino? What is this luminous nature that all of these masters, beginning with the Buddha, have said again and again and again in every conceivable way, thinking of any way they could of expressing it in a new way to get our attention. And then being so inspired, okay, I want to know that. Okay, here's the door. Here's your seat. Here's the path. Now, you find out for yourself. And that initial moment of, oh, you mean I have to? Becomes, oh, I have to. You are the one. Tomorrow I'm going to talk about four powers. A teaching that touches on the power that we have, right? We're in it every moment. We call it ki. We call it breath. We call it awareness. It's so much more than we know. And we are in the door. We are in the room. We are in the chamber. And it is in constancy. You know, that's an important aspect of practice, constancy, which means moment to moment, but it also means day by day, month by month, year by year, decade by decade, lifetime by lifetime. That's how all deep, deep things open up, right? Is you have to stick around. You have to keep going back and going back and going back and drinking from that well again and again and again. So it's good to do that together.
Thanks for listening. You can find more Dharma talks, interviews, and events at zmm.org/media. While online, please check out the Jizo Project, our multifaceted initiative to make Zen Mountain Monastery more accessible and welcoming to all. Learn about the new Jizo House building and accessibility enhancements to existing facilities that are just two aspects to this exciting endeavor. Find out more and see how you can get involved at zmm.org/JizoProject. That's JizoProject.